Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Only Podcast. I am your co-host, Austin Smith, joined as always by your other co-host, John Kirby. You can find us on Twitter at ACSmith06 and at John_Kirby. And as always, follow the mothership at The Only Colors. Today is Tuesday, January 4th, 2022. John, Happy New Year.
Hey. New Year, new me. Same me, though.
It's actually the exact same person, but now we're officially in the future because that 2022 does not sound to me like a real year. It just sounds like we have crossed the threshold of the future, and that's where we will be from here on out.
It's the new me trying to do something to better myself for about 4 days and then quitting. That's all the new year brings.
So. I mean, I'm eating pasta for lunch today. So clearly me has not, there is no new me. I'm just sticking with what has worked? Question mark.
Going with what got me here.
Yeah. I guess the only thing that's a little bit different headed into 2022 is that we're starting this podcast with football instead of with basketball. And, you know, listen, we're giving this team that deserved recognition and had a very, very fun and unexpected year, you know, the first bit of pub here in 2022. Let's start with the fun. John, Michigan State, 2021 Peach Bowl champs, 31-21 win against Pitt. I don't know if I'd call this entire game fun, but I think it's pretty awesome that MSU finished with 11 wins and was able to beat the ACC champs in a primetime bowl game. I think that was pretty awesome. Your thoughts?
We can look back and pretend it was all fun. I would say for the majority of the game was not fun. And one fun part of it, though, was I would say starting a Twitter Spaces and just listening to everyone's thoughts. I've been laughing about that for a week. That was just so funny to hear people's real-time thoughts, because it's one thing to read it on Twitter, what everyone's thinking, but when you hear someone, dude, my favorite was my man who joined the Twitter Spaces from Mercedes-Benz stadium at halftime, and it was like, bad vibes over here, man.
I love that. It's so good. I mean, Twitter Spaces is such a stupid thing, but dude, was it made for college football or was it made for college football? There is no better group of individuals to market this capability to, where we just all get in and start talking about bad vibes at halftime, wild overreactions, coaching, plane tag tailing. I mean, some tremendous stuff. And listen, major credit to Florida State for really being the people to land on the moon and make Twitter Spaces work. Right. Because the Fire Mike Norvell Twitter Space, I think we'll look back at as our whichever Apollo actually landed on the moon moment for Twitter Spaces.
It was incredible. But about the game, the reason there was a lot of bad vibes is, well, you're playing Pitt. They had a backup quarterback, and you're like, it's cool. It's chill. MSU scores right away. That was super fun. Standard Peyton Thorne to Jaden Reed action. And then Pitt does stuff. Nick Patty gets knocked out of the game on his second drive, dunzo. And then this poor kid, Davis Bevel, who – we were saying it's like big Theo Day vibes. Like he was,
oh yeah.
Let's just say my man didn't feel, he was like chatting it up on the sideline with like his scout team homies when they were like, hey man, you're in. And he's like, oh no.
Oh no. That is not why I came to school here.
I came here to be just chilling. He actually played pretty decently well, considering all things considered. I will say really quickly, I don't know if I can watch these games not on Skycam anymore. I experienced Skycam. I don't know if I can go back. because this poor kid who had a nice stat line, I was live betting MSU to win, partially because I was hammer drunk, but also because I'm watching this kid. I'm like right behind him with the camera, and it's just chaos. Immediate collapsing pocket. He has no interest in like checking down. He's staring at Jacob Panishuk every snap. Like, not because Panishuk's coming into his like his grill. It's because he's like, it's going so fast for him. Which, of course, he's a third string quarterback. It's going so fast. And I'm like, there's no way Pitt scores. They can't. It is not possible when I'm watching this kid. They're asking him to run an offense that he knows about 20 plays of. And so MSU a little bit gets bailed out. I don't know how it would have worked out if Patty stays in the game. Could have been a barn burner. But Peyton Thorne kind of stepped up in the fourth quarter and took him home.
Yeah. Yeah, this was ugly. I mean, honestly, after the first quarter, that middle 50% of the game was no bueno. I mean, it's funny. It's when you think about this season in general, there were these stretches from time to time throughout a handful of different games. Nebraska is the one that jumps out at me as just this long stretch of nothingness. And typically that had happened because you couldn't run the ball. And lo and behold, not having Kenneth Walker made an impact on this one. Jordan Simmons ended up being the leading rusher. He had 23 yards on 16 carries. I think that's pretty much all you need to know about the running game.
Terrible.
But just not good. And I don't think that's all on Simmons. I don't think it's all on Elijah Collins. I don't think it's all on, you know, listen, Kenneth Walker's amazing. Do not get me wrong. But I don't think this running performance you saw here this year or this in this bowl game is like a harbinger of things to come. No Jarrett Horst in this game. And honestly, they were kind of selling out against the run because MSU had shown they're going to try to do it no matter what. And to their credit, they stuck with it, whether it worked or not. But it was refreshing to see Peyton Thorne shake off some really, really un-Peyton Thorne-like throws. I mean, just missing open receivers, under throwing deep balls. What we've seen throughout the years, he's been pretty consistent, but he can also be, it's something he's going to have to iron out. He could be streaky. Like when he's on, I mean, as I think you saw in the fourth quarter, when I believe he went like 11 of 14 and for 150 yards and a touchdown, you know, when he turns it on, he's electric. Like he is incredible. But I think he threw two touchdowns in that fourth quarter, actually. But he had that stretch in the middle part of the game where you're just like, what is going on here? He's not close. But you know, the receipt, when that team was going, I mean, you had Naylor making crazy catches. You had Trey Mosley, who I think deserves a huge shout out for just like underratedly being a huge part of the offense all year, making big catches over the middle. You had even Malik Carr making a big catch down the field. Should have had a touchdown on another play, but I digress. And then Jaden Reed, you know, hey, when you need your big play, you know, the guy to go to, making just an all-time, in my opinion, kind of Moss moment catch over the Pittsburgh DB to put this one away. Just a great gutsy performance from him in the fourth quarter, and a really nice way for him to close out a year and kind of put his stamp on the fact that like this is my team going into 2022.
You're absolutely right, and you know Thorne gets a lot of criticisms, but that happens when you go from I just feel like this happens every time someone steps up from a decent player to the highlight player. You go from can't this guy or what can this guy do to what can't this guy do? You know, you say, you know, when you have a quarterback coming in and you're like, well, Peyton Thorne, he can run a little bit. You know, he can stretch stretch the field. That's what we said at the beginning of the year. Like, what can he do well? Well, now he's played really well. So unfortunately, it means you get really critical of the things he's not doing really well. And that means he's probably had a pretty good season. And he did. He set the MSU record for touchdown passes in a season. The last one to Jaden Reed, where the right in front of the referee, Jaden Reed rocks the baby on the DB to his face. And the referee was like, no, that's allowed. When you do that, you get rocked the baby to sleep. That's allowed. Not too much, just a little rocking.
Just and one rock.
I appreciate the referee being like, yep, three. He's like, one rock, two rock. Okay, three's too many. Keep it moving. You know, but you know, I think back to Peyton Thorne, he has to take this. He's only a sophomore, right? But now yeah. It's time to take the next step. And the next step is going to be bumping up that completion percentage. We've talked offline about this, where he's like a 60% passer right now. Kirk Cousins as a sophomore went from 60%, then to junior 67%, and his senior year 64%. Connor Cook is another, you know, three-year starter, went from 59%, 58%, 56%. So you got, sometimes you are what you are. And if Peyton is what he is, I don't know if Michigan State is going to be able to take the next step. If he can grow, you can take the next step. But it's got to start with no more missed throws. Like, it's so hard. It's tough to say that, but it's so easy to say that, excuse me. Like, no more missed throws. But that's the difference between a team being an 11-win team that wins a New Year's Six Bowl and a something bigger, right? So
yeah. The
ball's in his court now, and if he gets his receiving core back, you mentioned Trey Mosley back. Jalen Naylor, you got to think, is going to be back. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Who knows, right? Jaden Reed, TBD. If you bring back that, and then you have Foster behind them, Keon Coleman, all of a sudden, you know, you're an offensive line away from feeling pretty solid about the offense. Is that fair?
I think that's completely fair. I would say that, you know, you made a couple of good points. Of, you know, I think that Thorne can bump that percentage up. I don't see him going the route of Connor Cook. I think for a couple of reasons. First of all, that's the skill positions that you mentioned. There's a lot of really good depth there that, you know, no offense to the players that played with Connor Cook, but I don't think we were talking about that same high level of quality depth. And also, Peyton Thorne's scheme is a little bit more, it's a little less boom or bust. Connor Cook, it felt like, was throwing Hail Marys down the sideline every other play. Thorne still goes deep plenty of the time, but there's a lot of those other little check downs. I think next year, I've been saying this for a million years, but I think with Malik Carr a little more involved, you know, you're probably talking about more involvement from the tight ends. And actually, Connor Hayward had 35 catches this year. That's not a small amount. I mean, so he was involved. You get a better, bigger athlete involved there. That could even bump those numbers up. Like you said, the running backs didn't really even get involved in the passing game. So there's easy ways for him to bump that number. And he's just such a smart, cerebral guy that I think that I see him on a positive trajectory in terms of that completion percentage. Now, you know, as you look into next year, like you said, some pieces moving around. We're not sure who exactly is going to come back, but I think a really underrated storyline here is let's say it doesn't even matter, actually, whoever comes back, whoever doesn't. This season was all done. This all happened with one full real offseason. And that offseason did not even include Peyton Thorne getting all of the first team reps as a starting quarterback. That changes because this is his year. This is his team. Potentially the next two are his teams. And he is now the unquestioned leader. I think that ownership opens up, the simple amount of reps that he has, A, gotten from this season, and B, will get this offseason is massive for a young quarterback. I would think that his comfortability with Jay Johnson will probably open up opportunities for him to change things at the line more often and get a little bit more of that confidence, which I'm sure is very high. And that connection between him and Jay Johnson is obviously great, but I think that only improves and probably helps him gain a little bit more ownership over the offense. And the other part of it is that he's probably not going to have the same superstar running back. So part of it is going to come out of necessity. Now, I think Michigan State will be fine running the ball. I think they'll be fine. I don't know that you're going to get Kenneth Walker type of results, but I think you've got enough quality bodies back there to put together a pretty good, effective a rushing attack that will be something other teams have to plan for. So Thorne is really the key to me for next year. But, you know, that's a year away. All in all, I think when we kind of zoom out and talk about this season, I mean, I think everybody needs to really just like take time and like don't get ahead and think about next season just yet. Like, give yourself a month or two and just really enjoy what you just watched. I mean, we've said it. It's like our running theme here on this podcast is that expectations change how you observe and feel about a season, how you contextualize what's actually happening on the field. This team had no expectations, which is why these years are the most fun. When it comes out of nowhere and it's guys just developing left and right, Peyton Thorne, perfect example, Kenneth Walker, perfect example. I would even say Trey Mosley on the defensive side, Beasley and Panishuk both being so great, Cal Halliday being such a star out of nowhere, Angelo Gross. I mean, there's tons and tons of examples across this team, you know, and to do it with a coach that signed a massive extension and is invested in the future. Like, you'll always look back at 2021 and just remember, wow, what an incredible year. But what you'd hate to have happen, at least in the short term here, is to lose what you just had and what you just witnessed because you're already getting excited about next year. Now, there's nothing wrong with getting excited about next year. I am, for one, extremely excited. But let's not lose sight of the fact that this team just, I mean, I felt like it was every single week. I was like, well, cautiously optimistic. And then they just played their way into, okay, I'm not cautiously optimistic anymore. I'm confident that they're going to be able to handle these games. And I think that's a pretty special thing to experience with a football team.
It is. You're right. You know, I think Will Hunter was helping join the Twitter spaces, which I needed all the help I could get. He was managing it, and he was kind of resetting expectations for people while people were rightfully gnashing teeth at halftime. And he said, you know, talent wise, this Michigan's a 7-8 win team, like roster. Right. And they won 10 games and they're, you know, half away from winning 11. They win 11. And, you know, he said some of that can be luck. You know, some of that can be get the right bounces. He said, but I think the other piece is, and I think he mentioned this, but there's a mentality that is Mel Tucker has very quickly instilled. MSU scored 21 points in the fourth quarter to win this game. That wasn't a one-off. They've outscored opponents in the fourth quarter 114-59 that season. 114-59 in the fourth quarter. Mel Tucker wasn't kidding when he, you know, was in the locker room. You remember those pump-up speeches where he was like, 15th round, we're going to be standing in the ring waiting on him. And he held true to that every year. Even the Ohio State game where they got their asses kicked. What happened in the fourth quarter? They showed up. They scored. They took every punch in the face and didn't quit. That you still got your ass kicked. There's something to be said even in the losses about a mentality. And it's, I think that is the type of difference. But when you look at a roster and you say, okay, this is a 7-8 win team, then they win 11. That's a huge gap. And a lot of it, we keep saying, is like, I don't know if we can underestimate, or, you know, the intangibles that Mel Tucker has brought to the table and this entire coaching staff. He's elevated players. We started 4 months ago debating if Anthony Russo should start. And then Peyton Thorne throws for 350 yards in the bowl game. And we're saying it wasn't, he needs to do more. Think about that, right? Like, he moves at a 15th all time in all time MSU passing yards, 15th all time. You know, he's now 11th all time in touchdown passes. Like, it was a special year. You're right. And it's all about taking a step back and saying, damn, Jaden Reed became a 1,000 yard receiver. He had the 10th best MSU wide receiver season of all time. Wow. Matt Coughlin finishes with the fourth most extra points in Michigan State history, 147. He's the only player in Michigan State history to never miss an extra point. He's fifth all in field goals made and field goal percentages. Kenneth Walker had the fourth rushing yards in Michigan State season history without playing a bowl game. Like, these sometimes we like you said, it's so fun to just take a step back because you rush to the next thing and you don't appreciate a team that went 2-5. It's a wild jump.
I mean, Kenneth Walker, just to quickly add to that point, he also didn't play against Youngstown State. There were no stat padding in Kenneth Walker's season. Or Ohio State. It's a great point. He basically did what he did in, for all intents and purposes, 10 games.
Here's one more thing before you talk Kenneth Walker, because last thing we'll say about the Pitt game. In the last 25 years, there have been 446 bowl games when a team trailed by double digits entering the fourth quarter. MSU is the only team to come back and win that game by double digits ever. That's not luck. That's what we keep talking about. The intent, the thing that can't be measured. That's a coaching, that's a program thing.
And I think that's exactly it. Mark D'Antonio used to talk about this. I think obviously other coaches have used this before, but if you believe in program wins that happen because of the mindset you have, because of the mantra, because of the things that are repeated, keep chopping, deep water, all that stuff. If you believe in program wins, this was the epitome of a program win. I mean, you just gave so many examples of it. I think there are several great examples of it. Miami being another great one, Michigan being a great one. Probably, I know there's others. Penn State, there's others throughout the season too. But this was right up there, because MSU looked lifeless until the fourth quarter and then came out and did what we were expecting them to do the whole game. And that mantra, that the same way that D'Antonio's program had kind of that we're going to grit and grind, we're going to keep games low scoring, we're going to develop our players and let these guys really start to flourish in their third year. Like, those were the tenets of that program. The tenets of this program are maybe a little bit different, but I think they've showed through time and time again. And it's just credit to Mel Tucker. It's credit to Chris Kapilovich. It's credit to all of the, you know, to Jay Johnson. It's credit to all of Scotty Hazleton, all of the other coaches, because those mantras, you know, they don't work unless your team is successful. They don't work unless they are repeated time and time again and you give life to them. And I think that what a season like this can do is exponential for a program, because it gives credibility and credence to all of the things that are said constantly. And again, this was all off of one off season of real work, one off season of saying keep chopping, we're going to the deep water, all of that stuff. Now your program has an identity. Like, this is a school where anybody can come in, get a fair shot to play, and this is the team that is going to fight until the very end of every single game, no matter the score. And that alone is going to allow teams to outperform maybe the talent level. But guess what? When that talent level gets to a different echelon, which Mel Tucker has been very clear about wanting to do, and that's something he envisions accomplishing, that becomes a championship. That's a championship pedigree. The championship teams don't make stupid mistakes. Championship teams fight till the end. Championship teams make big plays and assert their will onto other teams. Those are the things that he preaches time and time again, that neutral thinking mentality. So I think when you zoom out and you kind of look at, you know, when you whenever his tenure comes to an end, hopefully 10 years from now, Mel Tucker, you look at the timeline of his program, you know, you could the hope here, and it sure feels like it's going to happen anyways, is that this year was the year where that bedrock was laid for success in the future. So, I mean, it's hard not to be really excited about the future, but it's also worth it to take a step back even now and just appreciate that this was where that all was kind of given life. So pretty amazing season. Yeah. And I don't know what else to say. Like, I did not, like, I was on here saying I think this team could get to 8 wins, and you more or less called me insane, and which is fair. But now I'm sitting here and I was 3 wins short. Like, it was just so much fun. Like, I look back at last year, and we'll talk basketball later too, and you had such a shitty football season, an awful basketball season. Credit to that team for fighting till the end. And I think that that probably made me enjoy this year even more because, man, both of those teams are just headed in such opposite directions from a year ago. It was a pretty wonderful football season this year for sure.
That's such an interesting point you brought up about the basketball team because the reason we love college sports is because they're so insane and fickle, and one week can be one thing and the next week is insanely different because they're very young athletes, and that's mm-hmm. what makes it so fun. And that's why programs need to institute, you know, foundational mantras, processes, procedures, because the product is so volatile. And so when you're able to find success, even when the product is lesser than, like Tom Izzo made an NCAA tournament with a lesser than product, athlete, you know, talent wise, because he had 20 years of institutionalized process, procedure, and foundational, you know, program things that are, that they will stay true to, because at the bare minimum, you will find success of making an NCAA tournament, which 300 schools would kill for, you know, in basketball. Yeah. Here, Mel Tucker is laying those pieces, those foundationals, the things that you can kind of live by. And if everyone stays true to them and believes in them, you can rise above your talent level, which we saw. It doesn't mean that's going to happen every year, but now you're start of like building your floor up. Like we talk about ceilings and floors of teams. The floor will continue to be raising as the talent level goes up, duh. But with the foundations, you know, the neutral thinking, the keep chopping, those types of things, with the above average maybe roster that was supposed to win, that was maybe a 7-8 win season, like we keep saying, you know, talent wise, even with Kenneth Walker, that's what moves the floor up. So we're just like so excited to see what the roster looks like next year to kind of reevaluate where they stand. We talked about the offensive a little, but we still don't know who's coming and going. There's some big outstanding stuff. And Austin, you're the portal master, so I'll let you tell.
Well, thank you, John. It might be my new title, maybe even at work, portal master. But yeah, it's important to contextualize the future by like understanding where the holes exist, because for all the sunshine that there is and the fact that, hey, you got your quarterback, that's great. You've got some really talented receivers, all that stuff. There's plenty of good on the roster. But as you said before, this is a 7-8 win roster talent wise. There needs to be more talent added in. The last recruiting class helped. There's going to be some more guys on the way. But before you talk about who could be new, I think it's important to look and understand who could be staying that has the option to go to the NFL. There's four names that I have kind of circled that, you know, some for different reasons, but the that could be super impactful. The first two are Jaden Reed and Jalen Naylor. I think it's obvious why these names are on here. I don't know that they'd be the most impactful returners. I think there's enough depth at the wide receiver position where if you, like you said, guys like Montori Foster, Trey Mosley, Keon Coleman, potentially a guy from the portal, there'd be ways to fill these shoes, but you'd rather not. Speedy Naylor, I have a hard time seeing him going pro. I think he would really benefit from coming back for another year, having a, you know, 700-800 yard season, which could be under counting what he could do healthy. And that healthy is really the key word. At this point, he might get drafted, but teams are going to look at him and think, wow, this guy is really productive when he's healthy. Would make a lot of sense for him to come back.
Hey, quickly. So Jalen Naylor had almost 1,500 yards receiving this year. Your point, though, is so big because being healthy in the Big Ten is a lot different than being healthy in the NFL. Like, you're going to get hit a little hard. And
there's more games.
There's more games. And, you know, I think Justin Thind mentioned to us and just said, like, after last year, you know, you saw there's no guarantees, man. If you're projected day three, you ain't projected at all.
Right.
You're not projected. If you are a 4-7 round pick projection, consider yourself undrafted.
I would also say at that position, especially, I mean, at wide receiver, right. Like there are so many talented wideouts. Like the guys that are on the practice squads that you're seeing getting called up and making plays for NFL teams, it happens all the time. Guys that are drafted super late, they're able to come in and make plays. And while that sounds like maybe a case for him to go because he could find that way, those guys, there's a reason there's so many undrafted guys that have to work their way up, because they're just not valued in terms of draft picks. It's there is such an abundance of talent that it's really, you have to be really, really, really good and productive and healthy in order to make the cut as a draft pick. And now you've seen positive trends from Jalen in his 4 years. I just think he could come back, have a 50 plus catch. He almost, like you said, he had 695 yards this year playing like six games, something like that. Half the season for all intents and purposes, maybe a little bit more, but he should really, I think he'd be wise to come back. If he doesn't, hey, go get that money. But he seems like the one that should really return. But there's another receiver, Jaden Reed, big question mark. He's kind of shoe on the other foot. I think Jaden Reed came out and had just an incredible season. I don't think he's going to be the top three round pick, unfortunately. A really deep wide receiver class, really, really, really deep. Top 10 receivers could all very easily make cases for being first round picks. None of them, not all of them will, obviously, but a lot of them could. And I don't know if Reed's in that discussion for a couple reasons. He's not a super burner. He's not, you know, then again, you got to think of this from the NFL's lens, not from a college football lens. He's not a super duper burner. He doesn't have incredible size. So his physical limitations won't necessarily keep him from being a productive NFL receiver by any stretch. But when it comes to getting drafted, that's the kind of thing that knocks you down a peg. And, you know, if he comes back and has another super productive year, no reason to think that he couldn't. You know, he could be in that discussion of the top 10 receivers in next year's draft class, as opposed to going into this one. But again, for both of these guys, opportunities will exist professionally. Reed, I am extremely confident, would get drafted. Naylor, much more 50-50 on. But I am, one thing I'm definitely 100% on is if they could both came back and stayed healthy, they would have phenomenal seasons in East Lansing next year.
So consider this. Jaden Reed had a 1,026 yards this year. That was, I think earlier I said 10th best. That was 9th best. That was better than Plaxico Burress' 1998 season. And he's looking up at his position coach, Courtney Hawkins, was the 8th best. And so who better to talk to Jaden Reed about coming back
seriously
than a guy who had essentially the same season as him. So he's going to get good information no matter what he chooses. So that's fortunate for him.
Yeah, so offensively, those are kind of the big question mark names. Defensively, there are two, and it's not a surprise that they both come in the secondary. And that's Ronald Williams, who was CB1 this year. And actually, we saw him start to perform much better as the season went on. Teams kind of stopped throwing his way down the stretch of the season, aside from Ohio State, which I don't even consider a game that happened. But Ronald Williams has a chance to come back for another year. Probably would benefit him to have another year of big Power 5 experience under his belt. You know, again, he's probably a 50-50 on whether he would get drafted or not. He has all the measurables, which is definitely in his favor. But, you know, he was a part of what's going to be looked at as a statistically poor pass defense. And, you know, really only has 1 year of a track record to go on. So 50-50 there would be a big benefit to Michigan State. Like I said, he's got all the makings of a shutdown corner, and we started to see him play that way down the stretch of the season. I think the biggest of all of these, though, is Xavier Henderson. Now, he's been a little noncommittal, hasn't really talked about it yet, but I think there's a very real chance he ends up exercising his COVID year and coming back to Michigan State. And, you know, there are a couple of reasons why I think there's a real possibility that it happens. The first being, X is kind of in this weird position from an NFL safety perspective. He's sort of a tweener where he doesn't have blazing speed, which is kind of necessity if you want to be a starting NFL safety. He's not really big enough to slide down to linebacker. So he's kind of this tweener player, super productive, love the team tackles, immensely talented, you know, and on the field, and then kind of in the leadership perspective, he's the captain. He's been a captain, I think, two straight years. Kind of the cornerstone, one of the cornerstones of the defense, and can be an extremely productive college player. And so to me, those kind of maybe professional limitations might keep him from going. And listen, if Michigan State gets him back, if he is back, this is as big a returner as Jacob Panishuk and Drew Beasley from a year ago. I would say maybe even more, all things considered, because he is the quarterback of that defense, him and Cal Halliday, massively important. And to consider what is, if he leaves, Michigan State is guaranteed to be starting someone with very little experience behind him. I mean, we're talking about either a true freshman in Malik Spencer, Jaden Mangum, one of those type of names, a converted corner like Kari Crump, Marquis Lowry, maybe one of these guys shifts back, or a junior in Kendall Brooks, who just transferred from D2 school just a year ago. So those are like the likely names. Or you're moving Darius Snow back from nickel, which impacts that position. So that you can always go to the portal, but getting a guy back like Xavier Henderson could be really, really big. I don't think it's on par with keeping Kenneth Walker, but it's at least with keeping a Jaden Reed around. It would be a massive player to keep.
Yeah, and like you said, it's while he is a good talent, it's about what's behind. You know, the replacement level. Mel Tucker's building a two deep right now. And we talk about this sometimes. It's like, until you get a two deep that you can replace the starter and have very minimal drop off, you're not a championship program.
Right.
Probably. Right. It would be very difficult. So, yeah, that's why it's so especially so important. You mentioned he's a leader. He knows the system. He's a above average player. You take him out and all of a sudden things get even dicier in the secondary. So,
yeah. And so knowing those returners, there are a couple positions to keep an eye out for as we have officially entered portal season, mm-hmm. which was a very active season last year. And honestly, I think could be pretty active again this year. So I had six position groups, which is a lot to keep an eye on. The most important, I think, we'll go from least important to most important. Least important, I think Michigan State has already addressed, but would not be surprised to see them address further, and that's running back. Jalen Berger coming in, former four-star recruit from Wisconsin. Big get for Michigan State, but, you know, it was important. That was not a position that was recruited in this last recruiting class, if I recall correctly. And so that is going to be – sorry, there's lawnmowers going outside my window right now for some reason. Okay. But Jalen Berger brought in his reinforcements. Wouldn't be surprised, again, if Michigan State has extra spots to see them take another one. But that's big. Then next most important, another one Michigan State's already addressed with Jacoby Windman, is linebacker. Quaberius Crouch, likely to go to the NFL. So that's a big hole to fill. Now, this one, I think there is some functional depth behind. We saw some really positive things out of Ma Gaoteote. Ben Vansamirin has played, but I don't know if I don't think you're in a good place if he's a starter. So Windman really filling a big hole for them there. The next two up are both the safety and cornerback positions, the two in the secondary. Listen, the numbers don't lie. Whether you want to follow the yards per attempt or total defense, neither one all that pretty for Michigan State's secondary a year ago. So more reinforcements, more bodies, especially if Henderson and Ronald Williams head to the pros, going to be needed. Because last year's results, even though you won 11 games, simply not all that acceptable. The two really important ones, again, one Michigan State has already addressed, are the edge and the offensive line. Starting with the edge, that's kind of the defensive ends, like a jack linebacker, just kind of anybody that's coming off the edge and rushing the passer. Michigan State obviously saw, you know, with the writing on the wall with Beasley and Panishuk both headed to the NFL, managed to get Chris Bogle, the defensive end out of Florida, and Aaron Brule, the outside linebacker slash edge out of Mississippi State. Two productive SEC players, potential like early draft pick type guys, but immediate impacts, probably two starters, not only replacing the two guys that just graduated, but potentially improving upon them, certainly from an athletic standpoint. I think you're at from a measurable standpoint, two guys that came off the assembly line of NFL prospects. So really exciting stuff there. Again, there's no such thing as too many pass rushers, so wouldn't be shocked to see MSU add another body there. But off to a great start with Bogle and Brulé both being in the fold. Now, the final one is offensive line. Indications are that Jarrett Horst is probably headed to the NFL. We know he missed a few games and was kind of injured. And so he's not going to be back in the fold. Leaves a gaping hole at left tackle for Michigan State. Kevin Jarvis is also leaving for the NFL before going his COVID year. So a decent amount that you're going to have to replace there. And again, basically Michigan State, if they do not go out and get players from the portal, they're going to be relying on players with very little experience. Ethan Boyd, redshirt freshman, which is at this point probably penciled in at left tackle, or Brandon Baldwin is probably penciled in there, the JUCO transfer. Could they be great? Sure, but you just don't know what you're getting. Gino Vandermark probably penciled in at one of the other guards. He'll be competing with, you know, Kevin Wiginton and Jacob Isaiah at this point. But again, none of these names inspiring a ton of confidence. In having to replace, you know, several starters from an offensive line, three starters from an offensive line that, you know, wasn't exactly blowing the doors off opponents is a daunting task. So I would not be surprised at all to see Michigan State go add, I mean, as many linemen as they can get. I think they'll be in the market. We know they've reached out to Hunter Norzad, who's the transfer from, I want to say, Cornell. There's a couple other big bodies out there from places like Oklahoma and University of Virginia. I mean, there's plenty of offensive linemen entering portal, more and more here in the next few days. Surely now that the bowls are for the most part wrapped up, would not be surprised to see that get addressed. Because if there is a weak spot that you're looking at for this team, you kind of alluded to it earlier, it's that offensive line. You're just not sure what you're going to get there yet.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's no one better positioned to hit the portal than Michigan State. But the difference, I think, this year is everyone saw what Michigan State did and is now putting as many resources towards it as MSU was last year. So while you might have a success stories and case studies to point to, people are recruiting it a little harder, I would say, than last year. So it doesn't make it necessarily easier, but you know, you have some success stories, but still, there are a lot of people fighting for those same guys who are looking to, you know, prove themselves at the next level, like you said, either from FCS or lower level FBS to get on the big stage.
I think the exciting thing for Michigan State is that they were able to lock in four big time transfers, like big time players that are going to be players or impact guys. I mean, you might have already before this new year gotten three defensive starters, guys that had offers for transfers from all over the country. Bogle could have gone, Bogle, Brulé, and Winman all could have gone anywhere. People would have been lining up for Jalen Berger too. And that's before these big time programs that were playing in these New Year's Six games kind of had their purge, right? For example, I just saw 10 minutes ago, Notre Dame offensive lineman and offensive 6'6", 280 offensive tackle, Quinn Carroll, former top 70 recruit, just entered the portal. The caliber is now about to go up another level, and MSU's already filled some big needs. So now they can really go after some of the high level Power Five, you know, New Year's Day Bowl type of talent. So there's a lot that's about to unfold here. I'm sure MSU is working very hard already to try and sign some of these guys up, but potentially some, I would expect to see, I mean, gosh, 5, 6, 7, maybe more additional guys. Now, will they all be stars? Who knows? Probably not. I mean, you had plenty of guys this year that came in for the portal last year who didn't make an immediate impact. But I think there's a chance that the guys they've already gotten this year can, and that there's some other really exciting opportunities out there. All right, John, should we do some bowl recaps after we take a quick commercial break?
Maybe, if the commercial break happens.
Who knows? Who's to say? Let's find out. 3, 2, 1. Now we're back. John, other bowls, they happened. We watched them, some of them.
This is my favorite part, is just making fun of everybody else is the best.
Yes, easily the best part.
Do you want to do Big Ten first? And then the six? Okay, because we got to build to it. I think I want to say you, we'll start with the Guaranteed Rate Bowl. And by the way, did you know there's a bowl game tomorrow that's not the national championship?
The Texas Bowl.
Dude, if you're a bowl game, why are you not scheduling it for this week?
I would be too.
It's so funny. They're like revving up for the national championship. And they're like, and also Kansas State. You're like, what is happening?
Huh?
So Guaranteed Rate Bowl. I think you said the score was going to be something ridiculous. And it was. Minnesota won 18-6. I think the takeaway for me in this game is that couldn't be a more Minnesota score, but also that it's interesting. We talk about expectations. The Gophers have a legitimate defense, and you get outside of the Big Ten and you can see how legit it can be. And here's an example. And then the other thing is like 9-win Minnesota. And I got to tell you, man, like Minnesota, PJ's kind of doing the thing quietly. You know, it was loud for a minute, then it died down. But I mean, you take a peek, 9 wins in Minnesota, they are very happy with that.
I mean, this was just an extremely Minnesota game. They had 200-yard rushers, which is awesome. And their massive tackle, Daniel Falele, had a carry and a touchdown, which is awesome. And, like, Tanner Morgan, he's like a rug that has just been in the house forever. It was never a particularly good-looking rug, but it's a rug, and it's there, and it does its job. And you just get used to it being there. It doesn't really bring anything to the party. That's Tanner Morgan to me, which is a weird analogy, but I stand by it. The fact that he just quarterbacked a 9-win team blows my mind. He completed 8 passes in this game through 1 pick, like barely over 100 yards. I don't understand how, like, his season stats this year, he threw for just over 2,000 yards, 10 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. And this team managed to win 9 games. That's, and win a bowl game. Like, imagine what PJ is going to do when he gets an actual quarterback.
I want you to think about we watching Tim Boyle play quarterback for Tanner Morgan is going to legitimately go to an NFL tryout and,
sure.
And simply point at Nathan Peterman and Tim Boyle and be like, why not? And everyone's going to be like, you know what? Sure.
Mm-hmm.
why not is right. PJ, you know, came in, turned the program, you know, maintained the program, I would say. You know, after things left. And so now that the expectations change, and I bring that up because you take a peek at other teams that had a 9-win season that are feeling happy about it. That's Purdue, who beat Tennessee 48-45. And we'll get to Wisconsin, who had a 9-win season, feel really crummy about it, I would think. So, but let's go to the Purdue game first, the Music City Bowl, because that was extremely satisfying to see Tennessee lose one.
Oh, man.
And did you watch the end of it?
Yeah, they got screwed. The refs just UT had a, for those who didn't watch it, it was overtime, and they had the ball on like 2-yard line, 4th and 2. They go to run the ball in, which I love them going for it, by the way. Love that. And the refs blow the runner down before he reached the ball across the goal line. He was not down. Like the camera showed, he was, there's no chance he was down. So instead, he was absolutely not down. So he should have scored. And instead, Purdue gets the ball back, runs the ball 3 times, gets a field goal, executed very well at the end of the game. This was a perfect, just like, chaos bowl. I almost feel like these teams are sort of weirdly mirrors of each other. They did a good job at matching teams up against each other in this bowl season that were sort of strange, like in terms of where they fall in their conferences, peers of one another. And Purdue and Tennessee feel like, hey, guess what? We had Drew Brees. We had Peyton Manning. We had some fun way back when, and we've been basically irrelevant ever since. They both kind of fall in that bucket. But 9 wins for Purdue, man. Hey, Jeff Brohm, he's back.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to I missed Maryland beating the brakes off of Virginia Tech 54-10. My takeaway here is The Big Ten East is tough, dude. Like, it's a tough division.
Dude, it is, man. It really is. Like, there's no way around the fact that that is it's the best division in college football. Like, Maryland going out and dropping 54. Maryland's just also, like, I've never, ever seen a program that can go from 0 to 100, and you have no idea what you're going to get every single week. It must be infuriating from a fan base, sure. For a fan base to just either be great or get just be the worst team you've ever seen.
Well, and we forgot to note that Rutgers played Wake Forest. Rutgers subs in at the last minute to play in some bowl, and they lost 38-10. Never Wake Forest, probably a head and shoulders above Rutgers, but I don't know if Rutgers is in Indiana are the worst teams in your division. Like, damn it, it's tough.
Yeah, dude. Also, quick, I'm gonna go out on a limb here and say that I think Rutgers is one of very few, if not the only, teams to ever finish 5-8 in a college football season.
Yeah,
I agree. Has to be, right?
Gotta be one of.
Yeah, I think it's awesome that they got there though. Like, I'm a.
Yeah.
We were having this conversation this past weekend. I'm not a conference pride guy when it comes to bowls, but I think there are levels to that where, like, I will root for some of the programs. Like, Minnesota, I'll root for because they're harmless. Same with Maryland. Same with Rutgers. But, like, basically anybody else, I kind of take it off the table. I'm very anti rooting for stable Big Ten programs.
Yeah. What did we say? I think we landed on if your program has, if we can see the ceiling or your ceiling has been met, we're comfortable rooting for you. If you're on the,
basically,
if you're on the come up and I don't know what to, you're not going to get my love. So, or you're already at the top. We're never going to get our, us rooting for you.
No.
So Wisconsin, they got to start asking themselves, is this their ceiling? Is this it? You know, they beat Arizona State in a game that allegedly happened. Nobody watched it.
Nope.
Won 20-13. I forgot it happened. And, like, is this it? Is this is the Paul Chris? This is what you get. And maybe that's okay. Maybe you can be okay with that. You know, you don't have to pretend that you should be competing for national championships. You can be Iowa.
Well, I think that that's what you have to ask yourself. Like, I have two things about this. Like, are you just comfortable with that? Which is fine. I mean, again, I think, listen, Wisconsin is in honestly a pretty damn good spot because your division is so bad. You're going to win 8 or 9 games every single year. But there's also this, like, oh, our division is so bad that we should probably win more than 8 or 9 games every year. Like, there's always this feeling of, wow, we really should have been better because this division freaking stinks. I think that there's a chance this is the least fulfilling 9-win season of all time. Like, if you look at, they basically played, I don't know, they played a handful of big games, but, like, start the season off 1-3, losing your three, by the way, losing twice at home to Penn State and then Michigan, and then losing the neutral site game to Notre Dame. Then you go on and you rip off, like, 7 straight. But none of them are, like, super impressive. I mean, the most impressive, actually definitely the most impressive, is at Purdue winning 30-13. That says a lot about their defense. Then they host Iowa, who we should talk about, the biggest fraud top 10 team of all time. And then you beat Rutgers, Northwestern, and Nebraska. And then you lose with your chance to go to the Big Ten championship game at Minnesota, and you only put up 13 points. Like, that season does nothing for me. Like, there's no high. When your high of this season is beating what you know to be a bad Iowa team after you went on the road and beat Purdue, like, if Purdue and Iowa are your two biggest wins, like, it's not like those were your only two opportunities either. And you also barely beat Army. Like, this season does nothing for me if I'm a Wisconsin fan. Just nothing.
You're right. I mean, they lost to all the adults.
Yeah.
That's it, right?
Like, they're the biggest teen.
You lost to the adults. You lost to a bad Penn State team. You lost to Notre Dame. Got crushed by Notre Dame. You got crushed
by Notre
Dame. Got smacked by Michigan. And then you lose to Minnesota. That can't happen. You know what I mean? Like, so So I don't know, man. It's not our problem, but it kind of brings me back to like the Big Ten East and the Big Ten West. You know, people are like, oh, I wish Michigan State was in the Big Ten West. I mean, maybe, because I'm telling you, iron sharpens iron. If Michigan State is not in the Big Ten East, I'm telling you, there isn't as much pressure, you know, internally to even putting on yourself to get to the bar, the expectation that not one set, many have set. And then the guys beneath you are all trying to pull you down. It's a crab bucket. So you got to step up. Whereas if you're in the West, you can kind of lollygag to nine wins and be like, ah, well, tough year, but maybe we'll run it back next year. You don't have the pressure. And I think that is what hurts programs like Wisconsin and Iowa.
Yeah, I could absolutely see. I mean, I think there's some real merit to that. You just, that's why Michigan State, that's why they're able to be the keep chopping deep water stuff. That's why it gives it life, because they have to play like that if they want to win some of these big games. And, you know, they play enough of them that you kind of, and honestly, like when you're recruiting, you tell these guys, hey, you get to play in these marquee games against the best talent every single year when you're here. Mm-hmm. I think that that means a lot. But I think we need to talk about the other. I'm going to skip ahead to the Citrus Bowl. We'll come back to the Outback Bowl. I just said that I think that was the least, just the worst nine-win team of all time. Maybe not the worst nine-win, least fulfilling nine-win team. Iowa is unquestionably the worst 10-win team of all time. That is a bad football team. They were bad. They were bad. They were bad all year. And if I look at their – and, God, going through their schedule, like every quote-unquote big win turned out to be the biggest fraudulent, most fraudulent win. Start the year with a huge win over 17th ranked Indiana. Indiana went 2-10. And they go on the road and beat Iowa State. Iowa State went 7-6. And then it's Kent State, Colorado State, Maryland. Nothing there. Then they beat Penn State at home, a 7-6 team who was playing their backup quarterback. They lose to Purdue. They lose at Wisconsin, your other two chances for big boy wins. Their last four wins, Northwestern, Minnesota, Illinois, Nebraska. Their biggest margin of victory in that stretch was by 10 against Illinois. Illinois is 5-17. Then they go to the Big Ten championship game, somehow get their asses handed to them by Michigan, which is what we all knew would happen. And then they go to the bowl game and they lose to the Iowa of the SEC in Kentucky, 20-17. They had every chance to win this game and they just refused to do it. And guess what? They did all of this with the defense that intercepted the most passes in the entire country. Imagine if they didn't do that. What this team would have won how many games? I mean, like five. I legitimately think this is like a 6-win team if they don't have that insane playmaking.
Well, they have built-in friskiness to the program.
True.
So they have that going for them. But to your point, like, you can't – I'm sorry. Kentucky can be upstart. Kentucky can be better than what, you know, your older brother or your, you know, dad remember them as. I do not care. I don't care. You can't score 13 against Kentucky. What are we doing? And then, you know – And then the worst part for Iowa was they had the chance to essentially win. I don't want to say win the game, but it was in the hands of the defense. You're up, you know, 17-13, and you have to stop Kentucky from scoring a touchdown. That should be pretty easy. And Kentucky walks on you, gives the ball to their best player, Wandale Robinson, former Nebraska wide receiver.
Stud.
Who has 10 receptions for 170 yards. And it's like, I don't know, man. It's just Iowa is Iowa. They're mid, and they're okay with that. And, you know, we've already joked about how Mark Stoops at Kentucky is going to take the Iowa job and they're going to continue to be mid, and that's fine. But it's just kind of a good, you know what it is? We're annoyed. It annoys us. Like, care more. Come on.
Just be better. Like, care. It's. I don't know. I just don't get it. This is also the major downside of nepotism, because Brian Ferentz is just a horrific offensive coordinator. And I don't understand how Spencer Petras is so bad. Like, find a way to do something better. I don't get it. Anyways, I'm expecting a 4-win season from Iowa next year.
Well, And then, you know, let's go back to the Outback Bowl. Penn State says, nah, not for me. don't want to do it. 7-6 after James Franklin's massive extension. Loses 24-10 to Arkansas. I don't care if this is Arkansas's best year ever. You can't be losing by 14 to Arkansas, guys. Sorry.
No, I mean, this is also, I think I said this to you before. I would hate James Franklin if I was Penn State. I would hate him. I would think of him as the biggest snake oil salesman, chokes in big moments every year. And if I look at this year's schedule, all it does is reinforce all of that. I mean, they start off this year with the big wins against Wisconsin and Auburn. You're sitting at 5-0, and what do? Immediately go in the tank. Every other big boy you play the rest of the way, which I'm including Iowa in this for some reason, but Iowa, Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State, Arkansas, the five ranked teams you played the rest of the way, losses. Toss in a 9 overtime loss to Illinois at home in the mix. I mean, the only teams you beat the rest of the way are Maryland and Rutgers, like technically not even Big Ten wins in my eyes. Just a trash season. And Mel Tucker, James Franklin needs to give Mel Tucker, he needs to send him 10% of his contract, because he's the only reason why James Franklin got a contract extension. The only one.
It's true. Think about this. Penn State, this is Franklin's 8th year. As far as Big Ten programs go, 10-year average win percentage, of which Franklin was the head coach for 8 of them, Penn State is 6th best in the conference. 6th.
Mm-hmm.
That's not good. That can't be good enough. You're 6th. Like, and by the way, Michigan State's 3rd overall in 10-year winning percentage average in the Big Ten. You know, so like, I mean, is it fair to say that Michigan State has passed Penn State on the echelon of the Big Ten East? I say there's a very good argument.
At a minimum, they're on the same page. At a minimum. I mean, because the thing that would kill me if I was a Penn State fan is it's not like they're not talented. They have tons of talent. Well, their defense is extremely talented, and they just can't figure it out. And I also don't get how you can't build an offense that Sean Clifford can be better in. I don't get how, like, he's not great. And if I look at his numbers, like, they're not terrible, but he's just not consistent. Like, he completed a little more of his passes than Peyton Thorne. He still threw 21 touchdowns, 8 picks. But every time I watch him, he just looks like he's running for his life, and he's only throwing the ball 1,000 miles down the field. Like, and even with a guy like Jahan Dotson, I feel like that's happening. So I don't get it. I would be frustrated if I was a Penn State fan. And the bad news for them is that it doesn't get any easier, because, again, you're in the Big Ten West, and you had easy crossovers this year. So I don't know. Seems like you're in a tough spot.
Yeah, here's why it's not okay. You look at the talent roster composites for the entire team. Penn State is the 3rd best in the whole conference. So you need to be doing better than 7-6. And as it relates to, you know, straight up MSU, Penn State, I mean, at the last 9 games, MSU's won 6 of them. I don't know. MSU has the all-time overall head-to-head. They've won 18-17. Like, it's okay for everyone to be – like, Penn State underdelivers. James Franklin underdelivers. You know, it's starting to turn into a little bit of a Michigan situation. You know, where we just keep telling ourselves that they're going to compete with Ohio State, and they don't, you know? Yeah. So I don't know. They got to figure some stuff out over there. And then, do we miss any other games before we head into the college or to the Rose Bowl here?
No, I don't think so. I think we got them all.
Best game, incredible game, drunk. That maybe it was
hammered.
I don't know if it was alcohol. It was definitely Red Bull vodka.
Oh, yeah.
If it was a drunk, potentially other recreational drugs were considered if this were a football game that did drugs. Ohio State, I think the best part about this game was, like, I don't get how Ohio State's defense is so bad. Like, they won 48 to
40. Doesn't make sense.
This was a Madden game where you're just like, I just need the ball at the end. Like, CJ Stroud threw for almost 600 yards. What did that?
It was insane. And then Jaxon Smith-Njigba broke. It was unbelievable. 15 catches for 347 yards and 3 touchdowns. And his long was only 52. It's not like there was a 100-yard reception in there. And then, of course, you know, everyone's like, oh, they don't have Garrett Wilson. They don't have Chris Olave. Can they pass the ball? Like you said, almost 600 yards and 6 touchdowns later. C.J. Stroud's doing fine. Marvin Harrison Jr., who I think had 3 to 5 catches coming in to this game, not surprisingly, just like his dad, insane route runner, 6 catches, 71 yards, 3 touchdowns, made it look easy. Julian Fleming had 5 catches, 35 yards. They were fine. This team was totally fine. I think credit needs to go to both of these teams, because Ohio State, I think Ryan Day deserves credit for having them come out and really, but Utah got up 14-0 in this game, and you could have easily seen Ohio State just kind of shut it down and say, we don't want to be here. We should have been in the playoff, yada, 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 and just kind of, you know, call it a day. Instead, these guys just fought. I mean, every time they punched, Utah punched back, and they just kind of outlasted them towards the end. Cameron Rising, the quarterback for Utah, really unfortunate, got a nasty looking hit, probably a concussion, at least towards the latter part of the fourth quarter, which knocked him out, which probably ultimately their backup, Bryson Barnes, came in and threw a really beautiful touchdown pass. So it didn't, you can't point to that as the thing that ended up costing Utah the game, just an unfortunate thing to happen, because Rising threw for 2 touchdowns, ran for another one, including a 62-yard run. I mean, there were kickoff returns for touchdowns. I mean, this game was hammered drunk. But I think there is the one thing that's blowing my mind is I don't understand, because it's not like Ohio State had a bunch of defensive players opt out. They had offensive players opt out. I don't understand how their defense is this bad. It does not compute with me. Not first of all, it would worry me moving forward as an Ohio State fan. It's like, yeah, we're going to put up a shitload of points, but guess what? We play other explosive offenses. We might not be able to slow people enough, because Utah, not exactly an explosive offense, comes out and puts 45 up on you. You got real problems moving forward. Tons of talent, just real problems. So that would, they look at this point, and I think you saw it against Michigan. Back in the last game of the regular season, they got bullied. I don't think it's crazy to think that there's a real problem here moving forward. Now, I say that knowing they have tons of talent and they'll probably figure it out, but they're losing guys. I mean, Zach Harrison's going to go to the league. He's probably their best defensive lineman. I know there's a couple other guys leaving as well. So it's a little nerve-wracking if you're a Buckeye fan. But then to bring it back to Michigan State, how did Michigan State only score 7 points in this game? How did they only score 7 points against Ohio State? It is. I was not upset about that game then. In retrospect now, I'm like, how the hell did we not manage to put up double digits in that game?
That is not okay.
It's really not.
And you know the thing, we're going to see a bunch of heads roll at Ohio State this week, I'm sure, right? Like, there, you can't just like retain everybody. At Ohio State, the defensive side of the ball this time. Because like you said, there's too much talent for what happened there. And like you said, you don't know how it's going to come back. This is not a talent issue. Like, it would be really, really, really unlikely that they missed on all of these 5 stars on defense. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like Saban missed on these guys too. Like, they picked Ohio State over Alabama and a handful of these kids. Right. Okay, it's not like, so this is a coaching thing, this is a scheme thing, and I just wonder how many people are going to be replaced, because they're this a lot, and this is the insane part, dude. 11-2 Rose Bowl champions, they're fuming in Columbus right now.
Oh god, see, that's what I'm saying. Like, I envy the success, but I also do not envy that. That just sucks, man. Imagine that.
No, I can't do it. I mean, think about our pod. We just spent 45 minutes waxing poetic about how incredible the season was. New Year's 6 bowl win. In Ohio State, they are doing Twitter spaces right now, calling out Kerry Combs's home address, you know, where to send shit to. Like, there's a very different mental situation going on over there.
Yeah, expectations can be poison sometimes. So I think we all need to remember that moving forward.
Speaking of expectations, I don't know what happened to Michigan Twitter. They got themselves worked up into a tizzy thinking that, I don't know if it was a joke, but that they could compete with Georgia. And this isn't me being mean. I mean, it's like, we said it. It's like, I thought it was going to be closer. I'll be honest. I thought it was going to be closer.
Yeah, so did I.
I was not ready for the gap. I knew there was a gap. I didn't think it would play out until the late third quarter. The gap play of talent gap played out much earlier. And that happens. Been there. Trust me. Sat in that seat. So I'm not here to throw stones. It's just what for me was how a lot of people work themselves into talking themselves into not just competing, but beating a team that has 19 5-stars. And at the end of the day, like we keep saying, it's Jimmy's and Joe's, dude. I know we just said at Ohio State, their scheme didn't work. It's got to be both. But more importantly, it's guys. And Georgia's.
Well, I mean, this is, first of all, I enjoyed this game thoroughly. I'm going to be nice and petty about it. Really enjoyed this game. I'd like to formally thank Georgia for ending it right off the bat and not making us suffer. By us, I mean Michigan State fans, with that inkling in the back of your head. You know, you and I were talking about it, how this is Jimmy's and Joe's. Georgia's stacked. They're just a different species than anything else Michigan has seen this year. All of that played out, but there's still always that thing in the back of your head where you're like, but what if they're not? And it was just nice of Georgia to go out right off the bat and be like, no, we're still the best. You know, we were the best team in the country all year except for one day, and that's not going to change today. So, I mean, this is the conundrum, right? Like, this is now – Michigan's got to take a long, long look in the mirror, because if this is the style you want to play, the only way for you to win a national championship, assuming that is your goal, is to get on this level of what you just saw across the field from you, because you're not there. You're not there. You can't just line up and be boring and try to run the ball. You tried that 27 times in this game. You got 91 yards out of it. It doesn't work.
With the best voted offensive line in the country. That was the peak. That's the ceiling. You saw it.
Right.
That was the ceiling. That's the best it's going to get.
Yeah. And then you saw N'Kobe Dean and you saw Jordan Davis.
Jordan Davis. Oh, my God.
Just eating Blake Corum alive, literally consuming him. I mean, I think the first thing that tipped me off that this might be bad was the coin toss. When you saw
Ben there.
Stop. Him, Sean Oakman, anyone?
No.
Derrick Henry, anyone? Yeah, those were two intimidating moments. Didn't work out well for Sean Oakman, but that's okay. But him standing there next to some of their offensive linemen, I'm like, this might be worse than we thought. And it absolutely was. I mean, 34-11, I don't think even tells the story of the game. I mean, credit to Michigan for getting a touchdown against the second stringers at the very end. I mean, way to make it look closer. That's good. But yeah, this was ugly from the beginning. Yeah, now you're in a crisis of identity. I mean, if you want to double and triple down and just be what you are, then that's fine. But a couple things to note. Michigan State's going to play you really hard every single season, so you're always going to have to overcome that. You couldn't do that this year or the year before. You haven't been able to do it 10 times in the last 14 years. So that's one obstacle you're going to have to face every single year that may or may not work. Two, if you think you're going to get the same defense, or you're going to get to play Ohio State and have them come out and put that performance up again every single year, you're crazy. So that's two. Penn State, again, super talented, terribly coached, probably going to figure some of that stuff out. You know, you've got crossover games. You're going to play a harder non-conference schedule than you played this year when you played the joke that was Washington football. I mean,
no, they're not, Austin. They're going to play.
Well, maybe they're not.
In UConn and I mean, and I'm not knocking it. You should
go
nobody at this point, as we've seen the committee told us.
Yeah. But the point is that there's a lot of dream stuff coming through for Michigan. You had two top 15 pass rushers. You had a senior middle linebacker. You had the nation's best offensive line. You had a great bowling ball in Hassan Haskins. You're going to have to change a lot of that. If they want to keep doing that, great. I'm all for it, because it's not going to lead to going 12-1 every year. It's going to lead to 9-3s a lot more often. So going to be very interesting to see where they, what they pivot to. I'm going to float this out there too, because why not start the rumor mill? I fully expect to see Jim Harbaugh's name connected with some NFL head coaching jobs.
Yeah.
Not to say that he'll go, but one, he is crazy. First of all, he's a smart businessman for the most part. He's taken care of himself very well. He was smart enough to say, oh, I better keep my job and take the lower pay. You take the pay cut coming into this year to preserve what he could preserve. Turned out to be a genius move on his part, because now he's either going to go back to his school and say, I need a raise because look at what I did, or it makes it very easy now. This really backfired on Michigan, because it really makes it very easy for an NFL team to come in and be like, oh, you're making $5 million a year. How about we give you $8 million and you can be the GM? Guess who's the two franchises who will be lining up to do that are both going to need head coaches. And that's the Bears and the Raiders. Those two opportunities are, whether he wants to take it or not, no clue, but those are there. And they will absolutely call. We saw, the Raiders hired John Gruden and Mike Mayock. Like, Jim Harbaugh is 10 times the coach that either of those, and probably would be 10 times the GM that either of those guys were, respectively. So it's going to be interesting. I will not be surprised. Again, I don't think he would leave, but if one of those two teams comes calling and really put something attractive in front of him, Michigan's either going to have to up that ante, because again, you've got the guy up the road now making twice as much as your guy. Uh-huh. Or, you know, he might cash in his chips and go and say, hey, I came to Michigan to win a Big Ten championship and to go to the playoff, and I did what I needed to do, and now I'm out.
Well, he's got to figure one thing out, and that's top of mind for everybody, is what are you going to do at quarterback?
Yeah.
Are you going to process the only kid that's ever beaten Ohio State? Are you going to process the kid that got you to the college football playoff and had a nice season? He's nice. It's fine. It was good. It was fine. Are you going to process that? Or is JJ McCarthy chill to sit on the bench for another year? And maybe he is. Mm-hmm. I have no idea. I would be shocked if a five-star kid like him, and you see the quarterback, carousel around the world.
Yep.
You could start at 120 teams tomorrow. Right. Is that fair?
Absolutely. I think, yeah, 100. He's there. He could start. Let's just go through the Big Ten and talk about next year. Okay. Let's just look at that.
Okay.
Let me pull it up here real quick. Let's go up and down the list.
Not Ohio State.
I was going to say, in our conference, the Michigan, maybe not. Ohio State, no. Michigan State, no. Penn State, I think so. If Sean Clifford's gone, absolutely. Maryland, I think he would put up a fight against right-handed Tua. Rutgers, yes, he'd be the best player to ever play there, aside from Ray Rice. Indiana, yep. Iowa, better believe it. Minnesota, for sure. Wisconsin, yes. Purdue, probably not, because of Aiden O'Connell. Illinois, Nebraska, Northwestern, he's definitely started. That's what, 9 teams in the Big Ten alone that he could start for? He can go a lot of different places and play right away if that's what he wants to do. So you're right. That's a crisis. Because listen, if I'm JJ McCarthy, I am not trying to sit again. And what year is Cade McNamara?
He was a junior.
Okay. So he's going to have a COVID year if he wants it. So he could potentially be your, and I don't think he's blowing any doors off the NFL. So you're talking about potentially your guy for the next 2 years. Do you really want to sit behind him? And do you really think you're going to get a fair crack at beating him out? I don't know.
Sounds like.
Don't know.
I don't know. Not my problem. but yeah, so this offseason will be not short on big moves, because there are a lot of decisions need to be made. Transfer portal being peak among them. But yeah, the coaching carousel could pick up too. You never know. Two other games happened. We'll go quickly and then we'll talk national championship. Notre Dame played Oklahoma State. Bad start for Marcus Freeman. blew this one. He blew the game.
Yeah, couldn't happen to a better program either, even though I don't hate Notre Dame like I used to, but man, they really choked this one away. They're up 28-7, end up losing, I think 38-35 or something like that. I don't know, man. That just sucks for that to be your first game. That's just brutal.
Yeah, not fun. And Oklahoma State, that's a program win for them.
You know, big time. That says a lot.
And in a year where you beat Oklahoma and Lincoln Riley skips town, you got to feel like this is it. Like this is
your time.
This is it. And I'm interested to see how that shakes out, especially because there's another team in the Big 12 that's making moves, Baylor, because Aranda's that guy. And they took down Ole Miss. It's going to be Big 12 is not going to be as bad as everyone is saying, especially when Cincinnati joins the mix.
That's true. Cincinnati actually impressed me in their bowl game as well. But listen, I'm telling you, man, I've been on the Dave Aranda hype train for a while now. And I'm telling you, he's a great coach, and teams are going to look back and regret that they did not try to go get him this year, because I don't think Baylor's letting him go now.
No. No, they, well, at this point, it would just be who can outpay Baylor.
Only other thing I want to throw in about this game, and we don't have to dwell on it for too long. I feel horrible for Matt Corral.
Yeah.
I feel horrible for him getting injured. I don't think I've seen what the injury is, but I mean, he got rolled up on his lower leg, something with his ankle, just did not look good. He was immediately on crutches and out for the game. To quickly talk about opt-outs, Matt Corral is the reason why guys opt out. And I think what needs to come out of this, and that happened on the same day that Herb Street and Desmond Howard both said, players don't want football the same way. It's just turning your back on your team, yada, yada, yada. Players opting out, they owe fans, in my estimation, nothing. These guys do not owe us anything. They're playing for free. The only thing they're getting, you know, now they're getting able to get paid a little bit, but these guys have so much potential money on the line. They owe us nothing. If they want to opt out, that is up to them. Everyone should honor that and move forward. If they want to play, that is completely up to them too. He shouldn't be shamed or called stupid for playing. This is the biggest game in Ole Miss's school history, arguably. This is their first 10-win season. Mm-hmm. Huge bowl game. You know, he wanted to ride with his team and try to get a win. I respect the hell out of him for that. It's so sad. Can you hear me?
Yeah, John? You're back.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. I respect the hell out of him for what he did and playing. I don't think people should give opinions on opt-outs, whether they do it or not. You should support the player in whatever they decide to do either way, because if they want to play, great, that's amazing. This can happen. You shouldn't call him stupid for wanting to play, because that's what it meant to him. That's what he chose to do. If guys opt out and leave, like Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave, you should respect them for doing that, because they don't want something like this to happen and they want to protect against potential injuries. So I hate the opt-out conversation. It's up to the player to do what's in their best interest. So, and the other thing is, once you expand the playoffs, it's not going to matter. None of these guys are going to opt out of a playoff game.
Oh, and guess what? You get to say, here's the thing. At the bare minimum, you get to talk about that if you're Herbstreit and Desmond Howard, if you give your check back for the entire bowl.
Exactly.
No, I'm serious. You don't get to talk about it. Unless you say, I'm choosing not to get paid. I'm going to do this for the love of my job. Okay, fine. And even then, that's bare minimum, because you got paid the rest of the year. So, like, chill out with that talk. I think we've long been over Desmond Howard and now Kirk.
Oh, yeah.
So
anyway, it's a disappointing take from Kurt Herbstreit more than anything, because he's usually so level-headed about this stuff. And it was disappointing to hear from him. But anyways, championship. Right.
So first thing, Georgia-Alabama rematch. Georgia, 3-point favorite, despite getting breaks beaten off of them in the first game.
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of shocking to me, especially Saban's got some time. You know, I will say I respected that Kirby Smart said no Gatorade bath after beating Michigan. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a big win for them, which, wow, that was – And then the last thing I'll tell you guys before I'll also take it away is enjoy, try watching this game either from the coach's booth where you get six guys talking about, head coaches talking about the game, is an incredible experience because they can basically call what play is happening in before it happens. Or Skycam. I'm telling you, Skycam. It's going to change the way you watch football.
John's an all 22 guy now.
That's right.
That's the next step. First of all, this, everybody hates it, but these are the two best teams in college football. Period. End of story. I think you just saw it. If you think Notre Dame just lost to Oklahoma State, if you really think Oklahoma State would have put up a fight against Alabama, I think I've said this before. I have beachfront property in Idaho I'd love to talk to you about. If the third and fourth best teams, Michigan was supposed to be the second best team, and they got their asses kicked. Cincinnati was supposed to be the fourth. They did what they could. Ultimately, these are the two best teams, so we should want to see the two best teams play each other regardless of what's happened before. The two most talented teams, for sure. NFL scouts probably have already outdone their allocation of tickets for this game. I, on paper, want to say Georgia should win this game, but I will not. I will not pick against Nick Saban. I mean, it's strictly gut. I think every time I've watched Georgia this season, they've been more impressive than Alabama. Alabama has flirted with disaster several times, and it's caught them the once. I didn't find them especially impressive against Cincinnati. But they're still Alabama. And Nick Saban's got 10 days. He's got his record against his assistant coaches. He's got the last time these two played in the championship game, you know, we saw them pull it out of nowhere at the end. So I think Georgia is actually the better team. I believe that. I truly believe that. They've got better playmakers on defense collectively. I mean, Will Anderson is as good as anybody, but I think Georgia's got the better collection of talent. They have the better running game. They can throw the ball pretty well, especially now that Alabama's probably still going to be down Mechie. They've got just as many offensive weapons. But it's Bama. And it's like betting against the Patriots in the Super Bowl. Like, you can't do it and feel good about it. So I think Georgia's the better team, and I will be rooting for Georgia. I'll make that clear as well. But Bama, you're giving me Alabama +3 in any game ever, I'm going to take it. They could be playing the Lions, and I'm going to take them +3.
I'm 100% with you. Yeah, hard to argue against it, but, you know, it's also nice to see. It's just, you can see the gap. You know, you're going to be watching a different game when these two are playing. You know, it's just, that's what MSU fans should aspire for. It's going to be a while, I think, till you get there, but if you get there, but sometimes you just got to sit back and enjoy it. So, Austin, quick commercial break, or we'd end in the pod with no basketball. Your call.
Let's quickly talk basketball, very quickly. So we'll do a quick commercial break. Here we go. All right. 3, 2, 1. Sorry, we're back. Guys, we're going to quickly zoom through some basketball here because, unfortunately, John and I are both employed, and that just seems to be getting in the way here right now. We're not going to cover High Point, John. Or no, here we go. Let's do a good and a bad from the High Point win and the Northwestern win.
Okay. The good, Joey Hauser. Back, had a great game against High Point in tough conditions. You know, bad COVID, two of the five starters, and they were down at halftime. Not great.
No.
How about you?
Yeah, I would say what I liked was that the team handled adversity pretty well. Gabe Brown stepped up and made shots when he needed to. They could have found every reason to lose this game, but they didn't. The bad, I'd say, disappointing. What Matty Sissoko did with his opportunity to play just didn't look ready for the moment against a team that he 100% should have been on or been ready for. So that was disappointing. But all in all, hey, a win's a win. You didn't fall into the trap. So what about Northwestern, John?
Got everyone full strength, went into Evanston and won in West Lansing. They took a punch. They were down big 13 early, but it didn't ever feel like it was going to be. Like MSU was out of it. They just weren't hitting shots. Northwestern's probably a better team than we gave them credit for. They will win a handful of games they probably shouldn't win in this tough league, mostly because they have two above average centers. And You can't, that is worth everything. So we saw how important Marcus Bingham was, just in the way we saw how important Kenneth Walker was when he wasn't playing. We saw how important Marcus Bingham was in this game.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say the other, you know, two good points there. The other thing is that I thought that was bad is that they turned the ball over, kind of took a step back, really didn't get much of a game from Walker. I mean, he fouled out and didn't score. So weird semi-regression from him. We'll be very interested to see how he bounces back. And then on the good side, I would say, once again, this team showed that it can shred a zone. Zones have given Michigan State fits what feels like forever. And somehow this year, mostly thanks to Gabe Brown being a very good three-point shooter this year, as well as some other guys who are really stepping up, Max Christie, I would say even Joey Hauser, and for his part, Tyson Walker too, not in this game, but in general, you got more guys that can shoot, you guys that can find people for open shots, and Gabe came up huge shredding that zone, especially with a couple of big threes late. So listen, I never get mad about a Big Ten road win, especially early on, especially coming off of the COVID stuff, you know, all in all, and against a team that was playing pretty well in Northwestern. So I think this is going to shape up to be a nice resume win when it's all said and done. One of those that you look at, you know, maybe not one of your top, obviously, four or five wins, but then you kind of look at that middle body when you're talking about seeds and stuff like this, and this will be a good one in MSU's favor. As we look ahead, two games this week, John, the first against Nebraska, and yeah, they're not very good, huh?
Yeah, but the best news for MSU is that they took, or maybe it's bad news, but they took Ohio State to overtime, and that'll get everybody's attention. You know, they're not able to, there's no easy game in the Big Ten. You know, Nebraska is probably by far the worst team, but when they take Ohio State, who is a top tier team, I think you got to take every game seriously. You mentioned they have almost exclusively all transfers coming in. The only guy I want you guys to focus on is Wilhelm Breidenbach from Sweden. Mm-hmm. You guys are gonna shit when you see him.
Oh, he is awesome. I won't even give anything away. You're going to enjoy just looking at him in general. You're going to hate him, but you're also going to love him. Other game, John, big one, Saturday at Michigan. At this point, a very underachieving Michigan team sitting at 7-5. They've already lost a game in conference. I think this is a bit of a trap game for MSU. I mean, they're always motivated to play Michigan, but Michigan, I gotta think, is gonna be fired up to play this game because it's a chance to break out of what's been really a season-long funk so far. They haven't beaten anybody of consequence, lost to some bad teams. So throw the record books out when these two teams are playing each other.
Yeah, they're a lot better than their record. They just haven't figured out how to play together, and that's going to grow over the season. You guys already know enough about Michigan's team. Hunter Dickinson, Caleb Houston, and Eli Brooks are the guys. Michigan might even be favored in this game, and basically computers love them. So I think this game snuck up on all of us because all of a sudden it was Michigan week, and you're like, wait, what?
Yeah, I kind of forgot. Yeah, I think Eli Brooks to me is the biggest name here because he's really the only guard that Michigan has that's been doing anything with consistency, and he's the biggest threat from outside. If he's cooking, it means that things are opening up for Dickinson and Houston, and that's what you want to avoid. So I won't be surprised to see a lot of switching on Brooks if they're trying to run him off screens and stuff and get him open because between Christie and Walker, you've got a really good defensive pair there.
Yeah. You know, MSU season, you know, maybe even felt a little disappointed after this past week, but at the end of the day, MSU has tied for most in the country in net quad 1A wins, which is the best wins you can get. They're second most quad 1 wins, period. And they have the most quad 1 and 2 combined wins with 7. So they are playing as well or as you almost possibly could. They had lost two games, we keep talking about, to two top 5 teams. And, they're on the up and up. Now you just can't start dropping. They figured out a way to beat High Point. They figured out a way to beat Northwestern. don't look ahead against Nebraska, and then get ready to take a huge punch against Michigan, who I don't want to say is playing for their season, but certainly is playing to jumpstart their season.
Yeah. I mean, the scariest thing to play in college basketball, I think, is a desperate team. And that's what Michigan is going to be. I mean, they are on the bubble, mm-hmm. potentially on the wrong side of the bubble right now, kind of depending on what you, where you land. I think I saw them before last week, and they were already a 9 seed. So, mm-hmm. and I don't know if 7-5, you know, you got to look at it as Michigan and think we need to get to, but at least 500 in the Big Ten in order to make it. And depending on how kind of the lower seeds play out, you know, some conferences have some unexpected auto bids, things shake out other ways in the Big Ten. I mean, you know, it could get dicey quick. So this is a big opportunity for them to kind of cement, hey, we're a tournament team. We beat our in-state rival, you know, top 10 win, all that good stuff. This would be their banner win for the year. So on the other hand, listen, you want to have that killer instinct if you're MSU. You want to bury them. End the season now. Don't give them any life. Don't give them any hope. Go into their barn, take care of business, and call it a year. So hopefully this one last thing before we wrap up. This is a huge opportunity for Marcus Bingham because Hunter Dickinson is good. He had pretty solid games against Michigan State, at least his first one when they beat Michigan State last year, from what I remember. He's their best player. He's the one who makes things go for them. If he's going off, they're going to have a much better chance of winning. That sucks for Michigan in this matchup because of what Bingham has done defensively so far. But if Dickinson can get Bingham into foul trouble, then you really get into some interesting spots as Michigan State. So that to me is the key matchup in this game.
Absolutely. The backup center position is going to be huge for both teams because arguably Michigan's third best player is coming off the bench and Diabate. So, you know, can Julius Marble continue his strong defensive performance like he did against Northwestern? Does Matty Sissoko get out of the doghouse? Can they give net neutral minutes against guys that need to have plus games for Michigan to win? That's the key for me.
Absolutely. Quick thing before we sign off here. I just saw this. That bowl game you talked about, the Texas Bowl, LSU's playing in it with 39 scholarship players, exactly zero of whom play quarterback. So if you needed another reason to tune in for your second to last college football game of the year, there it is. You might see the wing tee.
Incredible.
Incredible.
I can't.
I'm excited. All right, guys. As always, we appreciate you sticking with us. Happy New Year. Looking forward to another great one. For John, this has been Austin. We'll catch you later.
Yep.